Okay, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Her name is Anna M. from Visalia, and she says when things get crazy for her, she just says, trust God no matter what.
Stand for me. My name is Anna, and I am an alcoholic. And this is probably one of the most unfavorite things that I have to do. I brought my big book because in the front of my big book it says, and it has my name, and it has my sobriety date, and that is 12/29/86. Yesterday I celebrated 29 years of sobriety. And that is so overwhelming. It's unbelievable. I want to welcome the newcomers. I want to welcome the people that are familiar to me. I want to welcome a group of ladies that have come here to support me tonight. And you know, for those that are new, I know that probably is like an overwhelming, how does that happen? And I remember one of my AA meetings, and in my very early years of sobriety, and I walked in and they were celebrating birthdays that night, and there was a man taking an 11-year birthday cake, and I thought, how can that be? That man happened to be a gentleman that I sat behind him in bleachers at school football games, because his son and my son played football. My thermos had coffee and brandy in it. He was probably waiting for me. But I thought, 11 years, that's impossible. I started drinking when I was in high school. It was a drive-in theater. It was a slow gin, and it was a 7-Up. And I was instant alcoholic. I was 16 years old. I had the boyfriend, and I was in, and I was feeling good. And I couldn't get out of bed the next day because I was so sick. Now, you would think that would keep me from maybe doing the slow gin and 7-Up again. It probably kept me from the 7-Up, but the slow gin went down. I was an alcoholic from the get-go. An alcoholic, alcohol was in our house. It was a common thing. You know, my dad had drinks when he came home. My mother, she was a teetotaler. She'd have the gimlet, you know, and, ooh, that's enough, no more. One drink was enough for her. My grandmother was an alcoholic. My family was an alcoholic. I've got a sister who was on drugs. It was rampant in our family, and I lost control of it totally. My mother was I have a younger sister. She's 7 years older than I am. And at the point that my sister was about a year and a half old, my mother contracted polio, and she left the house. And that's what I can recall as starting my adulthood. I took on the chores at home. I took on the laundry. I took on the taking care of my mother. My mother later on in life contracted cancer. I was 17 years old when she passed away. I took on running the house. You know, I still had taken care of my sister. I ironed my dad's clothes, and I hit adulthood. My dad married about a year after my mother passed away, and that brought me to a new freedom. I had tried to go to college, and I couldn't make it. My dad put me to work, and I was amongst adult people. I could blend in with the adult people. I could go to the bowling alleys. I could drink. I could go to the bars. I could drink. I could become a full-fledged adult at the age of about 19 or 20. At 21, I met a man that was 12 years older than I was. It was love at first sight. We lived together for about 3.5 years, and it was absolute insanity. You know, between his drinking, my drinking, and highfalutin, and I had everything that I ever wanted in life, except I wasn't happy. As I explained to somebody today, I had the hole in the pit of my stomach, and the booze made me part of. I was never felt part of. I went to Catholic school as a kid, and I wasn't baptized Catholic, so I couldn't go to communion, but they put me in the line to help the kids practice, and I wasn't part of. My mother wanted me to play piano, so I sat in the piano room and practiced while everybody else was out on the field having a good time, and I was never part of. But alcohol made me part of. I was the one that had the fake ID and went into the liquor stores and got the booze for the girls. Now, I still have high school girlfriends, and I can, you know, put a medal on me. I'm the only one that went full-fledged alcoholic and ended up in Alcoholics Anonymous. But every single one of them will back me. Every single one of them called me yesterday to congratulate me. And they're all normies. Now, that's uncanny. What brought me to my knees, and I'm going to fast forward, because when you put 29 years behind you and a lot of years of drinking, it's really hard to compress it down. I was in my late 20s. The man that I was with for that 3 years, with that relationship went away. He has since passed away, and probably one of the things that was hard for me is I never was able to make amends to him. I was unfaithful. He was unfaithful. Our life was crazy, and that was alcohol and a little bit of pot in those days, you know, in the brownies and smoking it and delusional. You know, I didn't have drugs. I didn't like pot. It made me goofy. Anyway, I got married in my late 20s. I have two grown children, okay? Just a little history. I have two grown children. They are both married. I have five grandchildren that I dearly love and five grandchildren that has never seen this grandmother drink. And the fun in that is I get to go have fun with them. I have a 9-year-old grandson that's probably equivalent to the 15-year-old. And what are we doing now, Grandma? You know, they spend summers with me when I'm over in Mammoth, and we fish together and we hike together, and I wouldn't be able to do that if I wasn't sober. So anyway, I got married late in life, had the two kids, had the tutor home, drove a nice car, had the business, had the friends, and I ended up being a drunk. They both ended up in Catholic school because I thought that was where they should be and how they were going to get their education. This mom would go to the volunteer for the Halloween party, volunteer for whatever they needed me for, and 9 times out of 10, I ended up being at that function drunk. Probably the nuns frowned on that a little bit, you know. My drinking took me to daily drinking. It took me to the insanity of I had no choice. It took me to the fact that I had a business, and in the back of that business, we used to celebrate the end of the day because we were really busy and tired and had a productive day. Well, I'd already been celebrating since noontime because I had a vodka bottle in the back room shoved in between the file cabinets. That's how insane it was. Slowing down a little bit, you know, like they say, control, enjoy, and control your drinking, that wasn't an option for me. My control was drink from noon until I got home and then maybe have some of that non-alcoholic wine or beer. Well, that didn't really matter because I was long gone. Someone says, how did you get sober during Christmas? It was just one ugly, miserable Christmas. I was unfaithful. He was unfaithful. We had a marriage that was in the toilet, and I knew it all had to end. The last drink I ever took was on December 28th. And that drink was, believe it or not, maybe a shot of vodka as I walked out the door. I'd already kicked him out of the house, and I was on my way to my parents' house. I had that one shot of vodka, and I've never had a drink since then. By the grace of God, I never had to go back out there to fill up that hole. I stayed here, and that was really hard for me because it was really hard for me to follow the rules. it was really hard for me to pick up this book. I had sponsors in the beginning that one was on near beer and one was doing something else, and that kept me safe because I didn't have to do anything. You know, I went to AA meetings and probably stayed in the back of the room and I never participated. I was about a year of non-drinking and I won't stay sober when I celebrated Christmas with my then soon-to-be ex-husband. And he left the house with the kids and it was a cold winter night and it was the day after Christmas and the kids were leaving and there I was alone. And that's the way I was when I was drinking. I was alone. I had a phone book, but I had no one I could call. I didn't have anyone that I could tell them what was going on in my life because I couldn't get honest with anyone. I didn't want anybody to know who I really was. I left that night from my house and I had a meeting list for San Pedro. And downtown San Pedro, if anybody's ever heard, was the Navy and the shipyards and whatever in its day. And there were still a few bars and there were a lot of street people. But in the middle of all of that is a men and women's recovery house. One of those is a men's recovery house called Beacon House. And they house over 100 men at a time at that house still. But all I remember is that there was going to be a meeting that night. I walked up the steps of that meeting and somebody reached out their hand and they just said, "Welcome." That probably started my journey and started my sobriety. My first visit to an Alano club was a little bit before that, and it was still an Alano club where they were smoking and sleeping on the couches, and I didn't belong, and I wasn't going back there. I went to another meeting, and I got to know some people, and it was a speaker meeting, and I started becoming a part of the community. Through that group, I met a sponsor, and I met a lady. I participated in retreats. I spent nights in her living room just talking and trying to be honest. She had groups on about 9 months out of the year, and we'd go through the big book. But I can honestly tell you tonight, by the time I was 5 years sober, I was still in the pits because I wouldn't get honest and I wouldn't do the complete work that was necessary. At that particular time, I had a business that was going into bankruptcy. I had kids that were involved in social services because something happened in our home. I had the IRS knocking at my door. I had envelopes underneath my desk from the IRS that I wouldn't open because if I didn't open them, I didn't have to pay the money. My life was a living hell at 5 years sober, and I said, "How can this be happening?" It was at that particular point that I took that pen to paper and did a fourth step and fourth and fifth, and it was more of a novel than it was, and it was still not very honest, I can tell you that much. I left San Pedro in late 1999. I had divorced the first husband. I had boy meets girl on AA campus, and he was in that recovery house, and he was, I 13th stepped him. I was about 3 years sober, and he was about nine, and it was love, and we got married, and we went up to Bass Lake in Oakhurst, and we were to live happily ever after, and that didn't happen. But I knew a group of people up there, and I knew AA up there, and I participated in AA up there. I still have friends up in that area. I have a lot of AA friends, Southern California, up there. And that's the connection that we have, and we can always reach out. So I moved up there to Oakhurst, and again, I got divorced. I would go to AA when things were really bad. When my life was a mess, I was in the rooms of AA, and I never could figure out why I felt better. Well, I felt better because AA makes you feel better, and AA makes you complete. Being in Alcoholics Anonymous and being honest with people and being upfront with people and just loving people, just caring about people, just picking up the phone and saying, "You know, it sounds like you're kind of not feeling good today. You know, I'm here if you need me." And I've lost track of everything. You'll be happy to know that. Anyway, I sat up there in Oakhurst in North Fork, out in the middle of nowhere, and here I was at the end of another marriage. He, unfortunately, it probably would have worked. He was at one time a counselor. He was sober, but unfortunately, he got into prescription medication, compliments of the VA hospital. And because of those medications, he was not anyone that anyone wanted to deal with, and that one was me. It ended up that he left the house, and I was left with my daughter living with me. And my sister came to live with me, and all of a sudden I was faced to having to get a job and go back to work. I had been semi-retired. So he left. I got the job. Eventually, my sister and I came to live together. I worked in real estate up there. And coming up, bringing it forward to about 2011. I know, it's just uncanny. I get to 2011, and my sister contracted cancer. And I had quit working, and I wasn't working anymore. I was able to retire, and I got cabin fever, and I needed a change. And part of my life, part of AA was always making changes. I would change meetings because I'd get in a rut. I would change going someplace because I'd get in a rut. But that's one of the things that AA will do for you. And if they had told me in the beginning that I was going to have to change everything, I don't know how long I would have stayed. But that's what worked for me. So anyway, in 2011, I decided that I needed to get out of the doldrums of Bass Lake and Oakhurst, and I landed in Visalia. And the reason I moved to Visalia was because my daughter lives in Porterville, and so she was close by, and she had two grandchildren, and that's the only reason I moved to Visalia. I knew absolutely no one here. But AA becomes your friend when you don't know anyone. You can go anywhere and go into a meeting. I travel quite a bit, and I usually go to out-of-town meetings, and there's always someone that becomes a friend. When I'm gone during the summer, I have a group. I have an AA group in Mammoth, and yesterday in the mail, I got a card from that group in Mammoth with a 29-year chip. And I mean, and it flat says, dear friend, happy 29th on the 29th. Wow. Your love, wisdom, and honesty have helped me immensely, and I am so darn grateful for you in my life. God bless you now and always. And around the chip, it just says, from me and your Mammoth Lakes group. Now, who does that? You know, who takes the time to do that? Friends. I also have with me today the picture of a gentleman, and I'm going to skip around, and he was my counselor when I was at Kaiser and when I was an outpatient. He is now deceased, but there isn't a time that I don't thank Eddie for my sobriety. He was mean, and he was ugly, and he was miserable to deal with. He would tell stories. He was a drug addict. He grew up in the streets of Brooklyn. He would tell stories about how he crawled around in the morning, tripping over dead bodies in the alleys, wanting to know where the guys got stuff. You know, I want some of that. I miss him terribly. Another part of my sobriety is a lady that called me last night, and we sobered up together, and we were the most unlikely pair of friends. We were never to be friends, and Eddie said, you will be friends. That's it. You will socialize. You will go out. You will come to love each other. Now, she was a heroin addict. I'm an alcoholic. And as far as I'm concerned, we have nothing in common. Absolutely nothing. And today, last night, she called me up. She's also just celebrated 29 years of November. We ended up, before she moved back to Wisconsin, we ended up doing slumber parties together. We ended up celebrating. I was thinking about New Year's. New Year's is coming up. And we celebrated New Year's together. And we go dancing together and we just have fun together. And we've shared all of our rough times together. Whenever I'm in bad shape, I'm on the phone with her and it goes vice versa. We get together about every other year. Her husband was in the service and he has a reunion and I meet her wherever she is just to spend 2 or 3 days with her and renew our friendship. That's how special she was. So anyway, I got here in 2011. I know no one. And the very first meeting I went to, someone says, go to the Bridge Street group. Now, it's a nice place. I like it. You know, it was a foggy, cold, miserable day in Visalia. Kind of what's been going on here the last few days. All I can remember is I walked in the Bridge Street room, I sat down, and the first guy in looked at me, and I knew immediately that I was in the wrong chair. I should not be there. So I graciously got up and I stayed through the meeting. It was wonderful. You know, it was a great meeting. I think I've gone back a couple of times since then. Then I found the Alano Club. The Alano Club brought back memories of the San Pedro Alano Club. I walked in the Alano Club and saw the names on the wall, saw some of those that were still there and some of them were not. Alano Club and that Beacon House, Recovery House, are the places that I got sober, and those are the places that I relate to. I went to the women's meeting. Women are your best friends. I know you don't understand that concept, but they will be your best friends. I've spent time and I worked through the Mothering Heights for a period of time. I used to drive the women here on Wednesdays. I used to go there on Wednesdays and we would bake together. And I love the women of Mothering Heights. I love the ones that have made something and they're out there and they're staying sober and they're working with their program. And what's really hard is the girls that I see that haven't made it, that have chosen not to stay in their sobriety or not stay at Mothering Heights or not stay with the program because it's just too rough. You know, I have a gal that I sponsored through Mothering Heights and I was there when her baby was born. She is now sitting in Folsom Prison and will be there probably for 6 years because in her sobriety she got bored. She didn't know what to do. It was more fun to go out and use and burglarize and do whatever. And you don't have to do that. You know, I guess that's my message. You just don't have to do that. So women, I'm going to appeal to you. You know, find a friend in this program. Stick close to them because they will be your saviors in the end. You know, I've been married twice and I'm not interested in that anymore. I don't need to be interested in that anymore. And I have nothing against it, you know, I really don't, but I guess it's not in my makeup, you know, that's all there is to it. It's not in my makeup. I enjoy my life too much to spend that kind of agony, you know, and a little bit, there is a little bit of agony, but you know what, maybe I still have time, maybe I just haven't met the guy, you know, the right guy. Hi, Jim. You know, and I wish, probably what I wish sometimes is I had the mental recall to know what was in this book and know what page it was on. But I know that every time I pick it up and something's going on that I can find it, I know I've heard it, I know I've read it. So when I got here in 2011, I was in one of those merry-go-rounds again. I was right back to square one. After 25 years of sobriety, my life was again crazy. The tornado, the chaos, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. So when I celebrated my 25th, I had been at several meetings in Visalia, and I saw this woman in the room, and I loved what she had to say. And one afternoon, after a meeting, I said, you know, can I sit down and talk to you? And I went to her house, and I drug my poor sorry body across her living room and sat on the couch, and I said, please, please, I need for you to be my sponsor, and I need for you to walk me through this book and these steps. And it was after 25 years, you know, and thank God I never got, I never drank and went back and drank. I was able to go through the book, and I was able to do the most thorough and honest inventory anybody could have ever done. I cried through it. I laughed through it. I was miserable in it. I was unhappy with it. But you know what? In these last 4 years, I haven't had to go back to that bad place in my life. I understood that you don't give it away until you get it. I understood that it had to be thorough. It had to be honest. You know, I was a liar, cheat, thief, infidel. I worked for a company one time. I stole from them. I got fired from that job. Now, you know, I'm a pretty reputable woman. How could that happen? You know, it was alcohol. I got a little carried away with the credit card. But somebody told me it was okay. You know, I'm lucky I didn't go to jail for that. I ended up making amends for that money. Both the boss that I worked for and the company that I worked for were long gone. But I knew where the man was faithful and went to church. And it was in an area I used to live in. And for about 5 years now, I have made a donation during the Christmas holidays to that church in his name to make amends for that money that I took from his company. You know, I've been with both of my children. My children know me from the inside out. I do not have a secret. I don't have a secret from anyone. You ask me and I'll tell you. My daughter is guarded about her alcohol. She knows it can be a problem and she doesn't go to those lengths. I had to deal with my son. He got involved. He was alcoholic from the get-go, although he won't admit it. And we went through the alcohol and we went through the drug period. And I remember sitting in a meeting with him one time in San Pedro holding his hand as he sat up and had to admit he was alcoholic. Now that just really hurts a mom when that happens. And his whole philosophy is that as long as he was exposed to the program, he was, he was protected. Because mom was in the program, he was protected and he didn't have to worry about it. Oh, so many wonderful things have come to light, you know, in my sobriety. All those promises. I get to travel when I can. I get to have a circle of friends around me. I get to have options in my life. I think that's the biggest thing. I get to have options that if I don't want to participate, I don't, and I don't have to hurt your feelings in the interim. I get to love people unconditionally. I have a 2-year-old mini Aussie, and she's the love of my life, and I never quite understood the unconditional love of a dog, and she is. She's my companion. She's my friend. We hike and we walk together, and she's just there with me, you know. And I never had that. I never wanted that. As I said, I have those 5 grandchildren, and I get to take them places. We make plans, you know. We go to the global wonderlands. That girl that's sitting up in Folsom, she had a 6-month-old baby, and she had a daughter that was with her parents. You know, she lost that baby. That baby went to Children's Services, and that baby was adopted out. The godsend in that is that he was adopted out by a family that wanted him, and he's out in Hanford, and I see pictures of him every once in a while. I walked her through that when she was sitting at Wiley Detention Center. I had to walk her through that adoption because it just about killed her. and I would visit her on Saturdays, and I couldn't hold her hand, but I could put my hand on the window. I'd never been in a visiting area. That was a little bit of a shock to me, too. But we've walked through several things while she's been detained, and now she's in prison, and I haven't gotten to Folsom yet, but I will. And she writes me on a regular basis. We hope, you know, if nothing else, that while she's there, she'll get the guidance that she needs. She'll get that college education she needs. That she gets a life when she's ready to come out of there. And that's what I pray for any one of you that are just on the doorstep, you know, of going to jail. You don't want to go there. If you haven't been, you don't want to go. It's a merry-go-round, and it's a crazy world. And I saw that as I saw her. One of my things right now is, and I told you about that sister. My sister is 7 years younger than I am, and when my mother got sick and when she became an invalid, I took care of my sister. When I moved in 2011, I moved out on my sister, and she was so angry with me. She wouldn't talk to me for over 2 years because I moved out on her and I left her. She's moved to Visalia now, and she moves two doors from me, and she has terminal cancer, and I'm her caretaker. And if it hadn't have been for Alcoholics Anonymous, I could never have asked for her forgiveness. I could never have gone full circle to take care of my sister again. She's still very ambulatory. She still gets around, but it's a daily basis for me. The one thing I do, I don't get out to too many meetings, but I do reserve about 2 hours on Wednesday where I go to a meeting in Tulare that I love. It centers me. It centers me so I can be with her and I can be a whole person with her. We had some really rough holidays. She had lots of expectations and they didn't come to light for her. She's not feeling good this week and I don't know what it is. And where I have to turn with that is I have to turn to God. You know, when I first went to visit her when she was still in Bass Lake, she said to me, "I don't know how to die." And I said to her, "Well, you know what? I've never had to be with someone or help somebody. And I hope I can help her through this. Being sober, I can. I can be there for her." And we do a lot of crying here and there. But you know what? We also do a lot of laughing and giggling and reminiscing about our childhood and how crazy it was. And about her parents and how crazy they were. And the mementos that I, one night we had a pajama party and we just sat on her couch and just talked about our childhood and what went on. And it wasn't an easy one. It wasn't an easy one at all. And when I was freed, when my dad got married and when I was able to get out and have fun, that's exactly what I did. I took off, and even though I was living at home, I was on a regular basis out there having fun on the streets and drinking. When I lived on my own, I would go out to bars and come home with some very strange people. My life was topsy-turvy in those days. And I never really became a part of. I thought I was, but I never was. At the end of the drinking, that hole was there, and I couldn't fill it. You know, there wasn't enough booze to fill it. I swore I'd never drink gin, and I drank gin. It's been an adventure. It really has been an adventure. I wouldn't have missed it for the world. It has turned me into a more complete woman. I wish I had more time, you know, in front of me. I'm up in age, you know, I have a senior citizen Medicare card. And I wish I had started the whole process earlier. I look at some of you young ladies in here, and I'm not trying to shun the men, but I, you know, relate to the women. And the life you have in front of you, it's just phenomenal. If you'll just stay around here and embrace AA. And it, you don't have to be perfect at it. God forbid, I was not even close to being perfect. I'm just lucky that I was one of the fortunate ones. Some of the women in some of the places I went kept me here. There was always that peace and serenity we get in here, no matter what's going on. Today I was at a meeting and I was the chairperson, and I called on a lady in the back after I had spoke, and she just flat said, you know, I don't know what got me here today, but I'm so glad I was, because I needed to hear your message. I remember being in those Solano clubs and those stupid signs on the wall, you know, first things first, keep it simple. I went to the, and there were a bunch more, let go, let God. I remember being in a Solano club, and I used to bitch and complain about the husband I was divorcing, and this guy got up and he said, you know what you need to do? You just need to come in here, sit down, shut up and listen. Oh, yeah. And then, by the way, while you're at it, you need to pray for him. And I go, pray for him? I'm still praying for him, you know. Luckily, he married her, and they live happily ever after. But it's all those silly little things, you know, that you think is so corny when you come in here. It's just flat corny when you come in here. But you know, it all has significance today. Absolutely. I've been of service. You know, I've been in service in Southern California. I've been in service in retreats. I've been in service for this group. And if you can do that and get involved and get to know the people, you got a little nudge on it, you know. You got your foot in the door. You got that chance, you know. It's just that chance, and you got to take that chance. So I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, because I think I've run out of all the inspiration I can. It's, as I said, to capulate 29 years of sobriety is just overwhelming, just overwhelming. And I remember my first year, and somebody said, get up there, get that 1 year chip. And I, for what? You know, I still have most of my chips, and I do pass them off now and give them to the people that are coming up behind me. And I try to recognize those that are coming up behind me. So I'm just going to wish everybody a very, very happy new year, and hope it's a sober new year. And if it happens that you think you need to go out, you know, take a second, think about it. And I've thought of it. My daughter, as a matter of fact, the other day called me, and she was having a rough day, and she was talking about being at the liquor store, and she didn't know what drink to buy. And I said, if I were you, I'd buy this one, and while you're at it, have one for me. You know, and it's, but the obsession got lifted. You know, I do not have that obsession. It isn't the solution to any of my problems. In fact, I'm going to be gone. You know, if I ever go back out and drink, girls, my friends that are here, please, just get out of the way, because it's going to be really ugly. I can just feel it. So probably for that reason, I'm going to stay sober. You know, I'm going to be here for as long as I can be here on this earth, and I'm going to be here sober. I want to die sober. I want to spend the rest of my years with my kids. I have a son and his wife and three of my grandchildren coming tomorrow. And there's just such joy in that. And they're little hellions, you know, all three of them. But just to have them, you know, and to be a grandma to them and have fun in that and enjoy them. I never enjoyed it when I was out there drinking, and I never will if I go back to doing it. So again, Happy New Year to all of you. Keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle happens. And if anybody can think of any more, you know, throw it in there. And thank you very much for inviting me, Bill. Okay.